coming in, gold and a world record. Ian Thorpe, the birth of a legend.
458 is the total, out of which Bradman has made 309 not out. It's a world's record.
Freeman is too good. The crowd roaring. Freeman wins gold. Cathy's the winner. Australia the winner.
First ball in Test cricket in England for Shane Warne. And he's done it. He started off with the most beautiful delivery.
Australia is back on the biggest stage.
Welcome to This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Here's your host, Sam Edmund.
To the show. As always, we're here for our friends at Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Well, today we're joined by Western Bulldogs royalty, a former skipper, the game's record holder, and a three times best and fairest winner. Brad Johnson is an AFL Hall of Famer and a great of the game, who was six times an All-Australian, including once as captain. Only team success eluded the man who became known as the Smiling Assassin. Brad, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
G'day, Sammy. Thanks for having me on.
Well, she's a whopping resume, 364 games from 94 to 2010, 558 goals, Bulldogs team of the century. It goes on and on. When it's read back to you like that, Jono, what emotion does it stir inside you?
Oh, look, Sammy, it was a great ride. It really was. I sort of go back to thinking that I was just sort of wheeled out every week, mate, to be honest with you. that's the way it sort of sits in a joking fashion, that I got through really well, Sam. I had hardly any sort of injuries along the way that held me up, and you know, that's why I certainly feel for the guys that go through certain things throughout their career, because as I said, I was just wheeled out every week, go and stand in the goal square and hopefully have an impact for the team. So it was a tremendous ride, honestly. It was extremely passionate for being involved in a really sort of, you know, supportive club. They supported me my whole way through my career, and I absolutely loved every moment of it.
And you'd have to be satisfied that you squeezed every last drop out of yourself. I mean, that's how it looked from the outside anyway.
Yeah, definitely. It was, and that's probably part of it. You know, I loved every moment. I loved walking through the doors every day and working hard, and that's certainly something that stayed with me through my whole career. But I got to the end, and my Achilles got me in the end. And you're right, it was something where I sit back, and you mentioned at the start that the one thing that eluded my career and the team was that premiership. We made a lot of prelims, but you know, I sort of sit there, yes, disappointed the fact that we didn't get that opportunity as a team going through the different stages of the footy club. But ultimately, we don't sit there not knowing that we didn't put absolutely everything into trying to achieve that. So, you know, we certainly sit a little bit more comfortably with that.
Obviously, your Fox footy duties consume a lot of your time now, but also Xena Sport, of course, which you founded with your lovely wife, Donna, and it's the most advanced female impact protection garment on the Australian market for women's footy. So I'm sure that's keeping you busy as well.
Oh, it's been great. It honestly has, Sam. We've worked really hard the last 4 or 5 years to get it up. We launched the start of last year, and COVID hit with sports stopping. So, but that was okay in terms of us, in terms of what we're wanted to introduce it to a lot of people last year, and now this year it's right out there in the sporting world. And the good thing is we had a footy focus because of the participation rates and the amount of females and girls that are playing footy. But it's playing sport, which is great, all across the country. The numbers are huge, and our vest will add that element of protection to the breast and ribs. It will absorb high impact. It'll absorb even the minor contact as well that can happen in sport, whether it's a pure contact sport or collision-based sport. So it's been great. It's been really well received, and we're looking forward to having more of an impact, pardon the pun, in the future as well. So, it's been great fun to be involved in that.
Now, just on Donna, Jono, we can't say this about many people, but is it true you met your lovely wife in four-year-old kindergarten, didn't you, and then you went to school together?
You have done some research, Sam. Yes, that's very true. We did go to kinder and primary school together. We didn't go to the same high school.
Right.
I went to a boys' college down in Geelong, and Donna went to Mount St. Joe's in Altona. And then after that, through university, we reconnected.
So the two of you grew up in Hoppers Crossing. So you are Western suburbs through and through, and you were a Bulldogs fan as a kid, weren't you? Was Donna as well?
No, mad Melbourne. Absolutely mad Melbourne. Her family are huge D supporters, her two brothers and her dad. Absolutely love the Melbourne Footy Club. So there, you can imagine how they're going at the moment, Sam, with the way they're up and about. So, but no, through the days at Hoppers and growing up and knowing each other, it was purely sport based in terms of the Hoppers Footy Club, and her family was involved down there as well. So we have known each other for a very, very long time, of course.
And what was a young Brad Johnson into?
Sam, it was just purely sport. I love my athletics. Absolutely love it. I still love it today and love watching it today. It's probably my favourite sport outside of footy. So I love all aspects of that. So that was me growing up, little athletics down at Werribee on the grass track. That was every weekend for myself. And then I love my basketball as well. So I played probably basketball and athletics were the two sports for myself growing up till I was about 13 years of age when I was allowed to start playing footy for the first time.
Yeah. So is that when footy first entered the picture in your early teens?
I always loved it. I always loved watching it. I always loved going. I went to the Witten Oval a lot and stood, out the back at the windsock behind the cheer squad, on most weeks. But I sort of was not held back at all from mum and dad, but certainly... I probably showed more interest in athletics and basketball, and really enjoyed those two sports, and always sort of had an eye to wanting to play footy at some stage. But with what I was doing in those other sports, I was just having a lot of fun with that. So I just stuck with that, and it's probably as much as mum and dad could cater for it at that time as well, with what my brother was into also, and just made life a little bit easier, I think.
You obviously progressed in the game though. How did you find your way to the Western Jets?
I started at Hoppers in under 13s. I played under 13s, 14s, and 15s for Hoppers Crossing, and then from there I went and tried out for Williamstown in their under 19 team as a 15-year-old. And look, Sam, I needed to get to learn to become a little bit tougher around the contest. I was definitely an outside wingman who didn't like too much contact as a youngster. I enjoyed playing in the midfield. I loved playing half forward as well, and so I went to Williamstown and tried out, and I was lucky enough to make their list as a 15-year-old. I don't think they knew my age at the time, to be honest with you. So I got through that, and that was probably the best thing for me, because I played a year at Williamstown. I played four VFA reserve games towards the end of that year as well, which was great fun to get that opportunity to play some. Senior type footy against men as a 16-year-old. I turned 16, and I think I kicked 1.7 in my first reserves games for Williamstown, which didn't get the result, but in terms of hitting the scoreboard properly, but got a lot of confidence from playing against some hardened men too back in the day in the VFA reserves, and then I went back and played for the Western Jets the year after that as a 16-year-old turning 17, and playing against kids my own age again. I was extremely confident that I could compete well against them, and it was that confidence that, got me drafted as a 17-year-old. So it happened really quickly, Sam, to be honest.
Yeah, so that 93 national draft, as you mentioned, you're 17. Did you know the Dogs were going to take you with pick 11?
No, I didn't. I spoke to Mark Kleiman the night before the draft, and he goes, if we call your name out, do you want to come? And I said, of course I want to come. And he goes, okay, see you later. That was seriously the conversation we had on the phone. Prior to that, I spoke to a few clubs in the lead up to it. We had a lot come to our house and have a cup of tea and a biscuit and chat about what they could do. I honestly thought that the Adelaide Crows probably showed the most interest at that time. There was some word around Geelong as well, but ultimately, I was pretty happy when the Dogs called my name out.
Now, I imagine your head would have been spinning anyway, coming into an AFL club environment. But if it wasn't, Jono, it must have been, some 2 weeks into your first season when Terry Wheeler was sacked after an 88-point loss to Geelong at Cadinia Park. You must have wondered what you got yourself into.
Yeah, look, it was full on from the start. Like, entering and trying to, you know, earn the respect of the players, and the lifts were pretty big back then. So, you know, you were sort of right in amongst it, trying to fight at a young age to really to earn that respect and show the senior players that you were sort of on the right track to you know, becoming a semi-decent player, or at least learning to become that anyway. So, and look, I had a fair bit going on too. I was still studying year 12 in my first year at the Bulldogs. So I was travelling to Geelong, going to school and getting back and getting to training and training and then studying and all those sort of things. So it was all happening for myself off the field. And then, yeah, obviously what happened in round two when we went down to Geelong and got smashed. And then from there, obviously, you know, the changes were made and Alan Joyce came in.
Yeah, so Alan Joyce replaces him. So two games into your debut year, you've had two different coaches. And Alan makes you wait, doesn't he, Jono? So for your debut, it comes in round 18, 5 days after your 18th birthday. It was against Collingwood, no less. 32-point win at the then Western Oval. So Chris Grant kicks three. Ilya Grigic is in the ruck. Leon Cameron's running around. Danny Southern. What lives on in the memory from your first game?
Oh, look, it's something you never forget, Sam. And you're right, I was made to wait, and in hindsight was a great decision by, you know, Alan Joyce and the other coaches involved in that. So it just sort of, you know, built a bit more resilience around the way that I had to react in certain situations. So it was a great learning curve for myself as a young player. So to finally get that opportunity, I certainly wanted to stay in there. Look, it was amazing. It was Tony Shaw's record-breaking game at the Witten Oval. So you can imagine it was a packed house. There were plenty of Collingwood supporters there. And, yeah, I played on the wing, and I was lucky enough that the things you remember, you know, Libba giving my first kick in league footy. I kicked it to Luke Beveridge. I think it bounced three times before it got to him, but that was the direction it was meant to go in. And then from there, I played on Mark Fraser on a wing, who was playing for the Pies at the time. But the emotion that runs with it, that the adrenaline that goes through you was huge. And that's something that part of playing at that level for, you know, a long time, that adrenaline of running out with your teammates is something that never disappeared.
Yeah, what a privilege. You're listening to This Is Your Sporting Life, thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals, a family-owned business since 1934. Well, Brad Johnson might have had to wait for his AFL debut, but once he got there, he wasn't about to look back. Next, Jono's career takes flight.
You're listening to This Is Your Sporting Life with Sam Edmund for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Welcome back to This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Hello, great to have your company on This Is Your Sporting Life, made possible by Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. We're with Western Bulldogs Games record holder Brad Johnson. Jono, the 1994 season was crazy. So Joyce has taken over, but your new club is still 4-6 at one stage. And your round 18 debut came amid a period, though, where the club won, I think, 9 of 11 to finish 7th and play finals. So after waiting so long to debut, you suddenly find yourself playing in September.
Yeah, the right place at the right time, Sam. It was an exciting, you know, period in terms of, you know, having made my debut for the club, which was huge, and I loved it. And then to go on and finished the season quite well. Learned a lot. I played more as a tagger when I first started out. So I'm playing on, and I think it was deliberate too by obviously the coaches to learn aspects of the game from the very best. So I'm playing on guys like Shane Crawford and Craig Bradley and Peter Matera on a wing for West Coast, and just learning from those guys, trying to stop them having an influence, and learning so much along the way around how hard you really have to work within game to be successful. So there was that learning that came along, and yeah, we played finals. We lost our first final to Billy Brownless after the siren.
Yes.
And then we played Melbourne the following week and got absolutely smashed. I think Gary Lyon had 10 goals for three quarter time. So we got belted off the park, but it was a good finish to the year, because from that loss in that first final, there was about 10 of us that had qualified for the reserves grand final, the reserves final. So we went back, played a prelim against Fitzroy, won that quite easily, and then played North Melbourne in a grand final and won the grand final in the reserves for the club. So it was great fun to do that. Played with some of my very closest mates today that also played in that reserve grade premiership. So it was it was a good time to beat the club.
Yeah, he had a great end of that season, didn't you? And I think you kicked 2-3 in that semi-final loss to the D's as well. But and you're entrenched now, Jono, so you barely missed another game, in fact. I mean, 2010 was your last year, but looking at it, from 95 to 2009, you play at least 21 games every season. Your durability was ridiculous, to be honest. Was it good luck, good genes, good management, professionalism? What was it, do you think?
Oh, it's probably a combination of everything, Sam. And look, I got taught some good lessons along the way. 95, I was dropped a couple of times by Joycey in terms of my form wasn't up to scratch, and I had to go back and learn some lessons. And the good thing was, I suppose, and the lucky part of it was that I was able to get back up into the senior team quite quickly on the back of being dropped and put to the reserve. So yeah, I learned some valuable lessons along the way. And it was a bit of everything. I did have some injuries along the way. I was lucky that they weren't injuries that restricted me on match day where I couldn't play. I was uncomfortable for a lot of years, so don't get me wrong there. But ultimately, I was still able to get through quite well. And I had some injuries in the pre-seasons that kept me out of training for 3 to 4 weeks. But it was just the timing of those injuries that that allowed that to happen, so it didn't miss any home and away games. So lucky in that sense of when some of the injuries did occur. I never had a soft tissue injury my whole career, so I suppose that helped in terms of being able to train consistently, be out on the track learning and trying to get better every single session. I wasn't held back because of soft tissues and missing because of a hammy or a quad or calves or things like that. They were more sort of your ligament-based injuries that I did have along the way. So, yeah, I only had a couple of ops. I had a knee in my first year of clean-out, and then I had to get my bicep tendon reattached after a season where I had a partial tear. Other than that, Sam, it was a pretty good run.
Amazing, amazing. So, Jono, if 94 was a whirlwind, I think 96 might have topped it. The club endure a horror run of losses. Alan Joyce is sacked and he's replaced by an assistant coach by the name of Terry Wallace. And then on top of all that, you've got a film crew capturing everything because you and your teammates are about to hit the big screen with the doco, of course, Year of the Dogs.
Yeah, it was a big year. There was a fair bit going on. I was only in my third year of footy, Sam. So I'm sort of sitting there, just in the background, not saying a word. Just seeing how it all unfolded. And, yeah, it wasn't a great year in terms of our performances that year. We just couldn't get going at all. I think we were only able to really beat Fitzroy in 96 was about right, I think. And then from that year, we had, the film crew follow us around the whole year and do the doco. We had a change of coach as well, which was highly publicised. And, we even had, I think it was Sean Baxter was even battling cancer within all of that also. So there was so much going on at the footy club in the one year. It was all captured, which was good for the fans, but it would have been good if they had have completed the second year in terms of 97 and seen how quickly things actually can turn around for footy club and how quickly you can go from being, an average team to a real competitor.
You would play in 5 preliminary finals, Jono. Now, each of them represent their own different form of heartbreak, I'm sure. We're not going to go through them all, but 1997 was the first. I mean, you lead the Crows by 5 goals at halftime, 22 points at three-quarter time, but you can't manage a major in the last term. It might have been 6 behinds, and it's a 2-point loss. Did it stay with you for quite some time?
It still does. Like when you sort of think around those aspects of kicking 6 points in the last quarter, that was the part that probably hurts the most, because we did have opportunity to secure victory against the Crows. We're in control for most of the game, but to their credit, they took their opportunities when it mattered most. So yeah, to lose that one was heartbreaking. 98, we thought we'd seek revenge, and we couldn't do that. Andrew McLeod was just unbelievable in 98, unstoppable as a player, and they destroyed us that one. And then the other three, 08, 9 and 10, was a different journey altogether, Sam, in terms of the type of players and makeup that we had in the lineup. And probably of those in 09 was probably the one that we let slip. But you're playing against unbelievable teams as well that have also had unbelievable seasons. So, we got close, but unfortunately weren't good enough in the end to take that final step.
Yeah, it's fine margins, isn't it? No 9 was just a 7-point loss, a real low-scoring grind to St Kilda. Of course, it was incredibly tense that night. Just going back to 97, though, I think you've always been really strong on this. One of those six behinds in the last quarter was Libba's snap, of course. It was called a behind. You've always said it was a goal, haven't you?
Yeah, I was in the goal square, and my angle has looked like we've had score review. We might have had a different scenario, but the umpire saw it his way, and that's part of history now, mate. We can't change it. I'm sure if Libba didn't think it went through either, he wouldn't be sitting in Brett Montgomery's arms. You know what I mean? Celebrating. So,
gee, the goalposts weren't much bigger than Libba back in those days either, which didn't help.
That's it. So, you know, it must have gone directly over the top. But we can't change that now, you know what I mean? That's how we saw it. And the umpire saw it a different way. And that's just the reality of, you know, the situation now. And Adelaide went on to win the flag. They found form at the right time. And Darren Jarman was unbelievable to watch in that final series.
You're with This Is Your Sporting Life, brought to you by Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Visit tobinbrothers.com.au. We'll be back with Brad Johnson right after this.
You're listening to This Is Your Sporting Life with Sam Edmund for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Welcome back to This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
This week's edition of This Is Your Sporting Life. We're chatting with Western Bulldogs Team of the Century member Brad Johnson. Brad, I wanted to ask you about round 21, 2000. Now, the 2000 season in itself wasn't much to write home about from a Bulldogs perspective. You knocked out in an elimination final by Brisbane. But to qualify for those finals, you are the only team in the entire season, of course, to beat a rampant Essendon. Now, there is a bit to dissect out of this match, but firstly, how did you engineer this result? Because this was a match that was almost ahead of its time tactically, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that's where Terry Wallace was seriously amazing in terms of coming up with different ways to motivate us to believe that we could, you know, be a successful team and achieve the what was considered the impossible. I think he called it Mission Possible, and we had the Mission Impossible sort of themes all around it. I remember we... I think we went out to Werribee and did our training out at Werribee, just working on that complete flood and zone that we were going to produce in that game. But the way Plough coached that game he coached it unbelievably right throughout my career. But that game in particular is a standout in essence, because we went through three quarters. I remember at quarter time, actually, we were sort of obviously went in with the flood and just rolled right back and tried to restrict as much scoring as Essendon could do. And I remember Joe Macedi and Mark McCurry sort of at quarter time walking past going, what are you boys up to today? You know what I mean? It was just something a little bit different that I don't think they expected as a footy club either. And so from there, we, you know, Essendon got on top of us at three quarter time. Terry Wilde, we were sort of within striking distance, and he goes, okay, let's let it go now. Let's go back to playing the footy that we know we can play. He released the flood, and, you know, we're able to then start scoring, start running and breaking the lines better. And then we got in the hands of Granny in the end to kick one of the, you know, one of the best goals in Bulldogs history. You know, left foot from the boundary, snap around the corner was just brilliant to get us in front. And no one remembers that Rowan Smith did kick a goal after the siren, but no one worries about that because we're all celebrating.
And just the build-up that you mentioned there, going out to Werribee to prepare, was that just to keep the veil of secrecy over the game plan?
Oh, completely. Yeah, completely. Just to, work on things in private. And and obviously, you know, scouting has been around forever in terms of what opposition are doing and what players are on the track and who's a bit injured and all those sort of things have been around. So we just disappeared for the week down to Werribee and did all our training down there, and we're ready to go. And we were all pretty set. It was a quick turnaround. We had to get things right pretty quickly, as you could imagine, because we had 4 or 5 days to prepare for it. But when you buy in, you get the group to buy in, then anything's achievable. And we certainly went out and executed as well as we possibly could.
Oh, did you ever? And so the tactics you employed and the manner in which you played, as you say, particularly in the first half, was seen to have got under Essendon's skin a little bit. And the game is tight just before half time when You are picked off the ball by John Barnes, the Essendon ruckman of the time. Now, his shoulder collects your jaw and you're seemingly concussed. Were you knocked out?
Yeah. No, I don't think so, no. Look, trying to think back of it, no, because if I was in that sort of state, then there's no way that I would have been able to come back on in the second half. So I was a bit dazed, got up. There was a bit of a scuffle going on. I remember Gary Zimmerman had to be physical with me.
You gave poor old Gary a shove off.
To get me off the ground and get me composed. I think that's all I needed. It was more the anger of the way that I was picked off, which I'd never really experienced before on a footy field, well and truly, you know, off the ball. So there was that, I suppose, aspect of it in terms of what sparked a little bit of sort of anger in that. And yeah, by the time half time came around, 20 minutes later, I was well and truly all good to go.
Yeah, it wouldn't happen now, but as you say, you returned to play in the second half. What was there much said at half time about that particular incident and your place in the game?
No, there wasn't. No, from what I can sort of remember, it was just, you know, back into what we needed to do. I think, you know, when things like that happen, you realise you're probably just getting under the guard of the opposition a little bit. So you're more focused on, we're doing things well here. Let's keep it going rather than worrying about, you know, whether, you know, we had a scuffle or things like that. They do settle down pretty quickly once you get back into the rooms and you refocus into what was required for us to win, because we were doing something that needed that full mental approach to try and achieve, because Essendon were obviously the best team going around and were in the game. So that was more important than anything else.
And as you said, at the end, fast forward to the end, Chris Grant does what Chris Grant does and kicks that great left foot snap to win the game. Now, you ran towards Johnny Barnes at the final siren, didn't you? And you might have flipped him the bird and given him a few choice words to take home. But it was that sort of night. It was an emotional night.
Yeah, it was. And I've said this a bit, Sam, that it's probably the most embarrassing moment of my whole career, because of the fact that we just achieved something unbelievable. And here I am, you know, going down the other end of the ground to have a word to John Barnes. And who knows what could have happened from that. If it was someone different other than Barnes, you know, there could have been something more sort of come from that. So when you think of it like that, it was just a silly thing to do, and should have just hung with my teammates. And I got that feedback straight away. Yeah. No question from the senior players and from Plough as well in around that. And they were exactly right. And I totally agreed with them. You're right. It was just caught up in the emotion of it. And I learned a lot from that night as an individual. Look, I got reported for hitting Barnsley in the third quarter. We both went to the tribunal and we both copped a week, you know, for both incidents. And and we moved on after that. We tried the flood, I think, the following week against Hawthorn and lost. So it definitely was a one-hit wonder. Don't worry about that, Sam.
There was something about Essendon, though, wasn't there? The following year at the same venue, you found yourself in the unfortunate position that was Gary Moorcroft's stepladder. How often do you see this photo, John? I must drive you bananas.
Oh, no. It was. You know what I'm like, Sam, and you know me well enough that I really appreciate unbelievable efforts in the game.
Yep.
And I've been involved in some that have happened against me, and that was one, and that's one of the best of all time. And I've consistently said that. I've always had a joke with Terry Wallace around why he put me in the back pocket to start with, which has always been a bit of a laugh post it all. But that he was dominating that day. I was just ahead of my time, Sam. I was playing assertive defence. I was playing in front. which was a bit unusual, you know. Like I had no idea what I was doing.
You were stiff.
With you,
you were very stiff.
I'm standing there, and it just popped up at the right time. Then Scotty Lucas kicks his only right foot kick in his whole career, and he sits it up nicely right on top of my head. Which I actually thought at the time, I'm going to mark this. And the next thing, I'm on the ground, and I stand up, and there's 45,000 people giving him a standing ovation. I went, oh no, what has just happened? And obviously the replay on the scoreboard came up, and I do remember my teammate Ben Harrison actually cheering the mark. He was right behind me. I do remember him cheering it instead of spoiling it. Oh. So, but we've had a good laugh about it now for you know, well over 10 years or more, 20 years now, Sam. So it's, yeah, but what an effort, honestly. When you look back at it, that that mark was phenomenal.
Yeah. You were all Australian, Jono, an amazing six times, including being named captain in 2006. I mean, where did this rate? This must have been a tremendous honour to be not only in the All Australian team, but to be chosen as the captain.
Oh, look, it was great. It was and it always come off the back of, you know, the team going really well, and that's and it might sound a little bit cliched, but it's the only way that you can really put your hand up to get those individual honours is when the team is really sort of going well and ticking along collectively, especially in the position of playing as a forward. You need the defence and the mids to be really, really sort of, you know, getting going and playing unbelievable football themselves to provide you with delivery and opportunities consistently, and that's what we were able to get through those periods that I was lucky enough to be named, you know, in the All Australian team. And I got to travel with the guys a few times, and playing state footy or playing for Australia were unbelievable honours, and more so from being when I was younger doing that. What I learned from some of the best players you know, around at the time was huge. My first ever state game, I roomed with Gavin Brown. Like, I didn't say a word to him, but there was those elements of being, you know, having that to be able to communicate and hang around with the very best in the game. And, you know, in representing Australia and Ireland, I spent 2 weeks with Mark Rusciuto as a roommate. So there was things like that that you just sort of really appreciate, you know, by having that opportunity to mingle with the very best in the game, which only helped, you know, your own individual game in itself in terms of preparation and what they do to make themselves the very best.
And in that 2006 season, you finished with 467 disposals from 24 games, but incredibly, you also kicked 74 goals to finish runner-up in the Coleman to Brendan Favola. I mean, looking back on it all, would you reckon, was this the pick of them? Was this your best season?
Yeah, in terms of goal output, definitely. It was something that I never thought I'd sort of get to around that, you know, 70, 80 goal mark. I never thought I'd ever get that. I always thought I'd be around that 40 to 50, you know, a couple goals a game, that sort of level as a player. But Rodney Eade was unbelievable in teaching myself some new ways to go about it, teach me some different aspects of the craft that was required as a forward that might assist in hitting the scoreboard on a more regular basis. So, you know, Rocket was unbelievable in the early stages, because when he took over, you sort of think, I was at that age where I probably thought I was at a level that it would see me out for my career, but he took myself and so many of you know, my teammates and the club to a level that we didn't think we'd get to so quickly.
And what was it you had against Geelong though, Jono? I think you kicked more goals against them than any other side, including a career. I think you slammed on 8 goals against them in their premiership year around 107. What was it? What was it? Was it playing against the best that brought out the best? What made you click against the Cats?
Oh, I don't know. Sometimes you just got a team, Sam, that you go pretty well against. And, you know, they had an unbelievable back line. I didn't go that well all the time against them, but I consistently was okay. Tommy Harley and Matty Scarlett were unbelievable players. And, you know, Andrew Mackey as well, I played on a fair bit. And they were tough. They were tough competitors, and I liked that. I liked that element of the game. As much as I was out there having a good time, I was seriously competitive. So, against the Cats, mate, it was just one of those. Maybe because they weren't too far from where I grew up, that I wanted to make sure that I did well. And I'd love playing it. I love playing them at Simmons as well, or GMHBA, whatever it is today. I loved playing on that ground. So I think that was part of it also.
We're talking to Brad Johnson on This Is Your Sporting Life, thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Plenty more still to come with the Western Bulldogs superstar after this.
You're listening to This Is Your Sporting Life with Sam Edmund for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Welcome back to This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Great to have your company here on This Is Your Sporting Life, thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals, a family-owned business since 1934. Brad Johnson is our guest today. Brad, we were speaking about your goal feats before the last break. One thing you had a canny knack with was the soccer goal. In fact, You didn't mind a volley, did you? And there was an incredible goal of the year contender, probably should have been the winner, mind you, out of midair from a tight angle against the lines at the Gabba with the game on the line. I mean, was this just pure instinct?
Oh, it was a lot of luck, Sam.
No room for modesty here, Brad.
There is. Look, yeah. But you know what I mean? You've got to put yourself in the situation, you know, and that's what, the most recent aspect of that was Eddie Betts in terms of what he did with his mid-air goal against the Bulldogs. And, you know, talking about that, you put yourself in the position. And sometimes you just see that, you know, if I grab this, I'm in trouble. So it's sitting perfectly for you. You know that in your mind that it's actually sitting nicely to hit it just as well as what you would if you grabbed it and kicked it anyway. So you throw the boot at it. And yeah, I was just lucky enough to get the right angle on it, Sam. And it is luck to get the right angle on it. Yeah. You know, you put yourself in the spot to have a crack, but then you've got to gather definitely a lot of luck to make sure you hit it in the right direction.
Incredible goal. Okay, let's balance it out then, Jono, because there were, if you don't mind me raising this, a couple of shots you had after the siren to win the game. Round 9 both years, 08, 09, North Melbourne, Geelong respectively. I mean, I think I was there live for one of them. I mean, they must have angered you at the time.
Oh, look, Sam, you've done this well, haven't you? You build me up with a positive, and then you come in with a couple of negatives to go with it. And look, it is every kid's dream, and I had that dream growing up that, you know, you get the chance after the siren to win the game for your club. You want to take it. And I played it out in the backyard, in the front yard at Hoppers Crossing many times. Don't worry about that. And I hadn't had that chance throughout my whole career. And then 2 years in a row at exactly the same round, it comes about. It was just, it's bizarre when you look back like that. But yeah, against North, we had that. It was Boomer Harvey's the happiest man in Australia because that was his 250th. And he was able to celebrate a win because of my miss after the siren that day. And that was, you know, I just hit it shocking. I looked up. Didn't handle it well at all, and I've said that you know, from the moment that it happened, and the year later against the Cats, yeah, it was a harder shot, but one I still should have been able to get. It was closer to the boundary line, but you know that's reality, Sam. You got to live with it, and you know I didn't get that opportunity again to try and rectify it in terms of a goal after siren. So I missed two big opportunities to win for the club. You feel that you let so many people down post that. Some of the letters I received weren't great either. But that's the reality of you know, the emotion of the game.
Just as well you weren't on Twitter at the time, I reckon. But hey, you mentioned Boomer Harvey's milestone there. What about your 300th? That was an incredible game against Adelaide, same venue, Marvel Stadium. You kick 5 second half goals. You kick 3 in the last 7 minutes, and the Doggies get up by 3 points. This was an amazing afternoon. This must live pretty large in the memory for you.
Yeah, it was great fun. The club were amazing through that entire, you know, build up to the game and the way that they supported myself and the family and what they, you know, brought forward for the game was just something that I'll never forget. And then the game itself was, I was a bit quiet early. Sam, I didn't get sort of too much of a touch and was lucky enough in the second half to get involved in the game a little bit more and hit the scoreboard, which was great. But we were the same. We got lucky in that game as well because I think it was Nathan Bock had a shot pretty much after the siren, after the Adelaide Crows, to win it for them. And the last quarter was unbelievable. We'd get a goal up, they'd come back, they'd get one goal up, we'd come back and we got a couple up and they kicked two late, or they had a shot late to get it within striking distance and then had a shot after the siren themselves to try and win the game. So that was a game full of emotion, and I was lucky enough at the end to come out a winner when quite easily, if you had to kick that goal, it would have gone the other way.
Ah, it's absolute dream 300th, that one. Dream milestone game. I was obviously marvelling at your durability earlier, and you mentioned the Achilles got you in the end. Now, the golf cart incident at training, now, it was seen as a comical incident, but I imagine you weren't even close to laughing.
Oh, I laugh about it now, Sam, because it comes up all the time. It's actually pretty funny when you think about it. Who would have thought that you'd miss a month of footy because you got hit by a golf cart on a footy field? So when you think of it like that, it's pretty funny. But look, at the time, I had the Achilles injury from Christmas in the pre-season, so I was battling with it in the lead up to Christmas. Had the Christmas break off, still felt sore, got it right leading into round one, where it wasn't 100%, but it wasn't going to affect what I was trying to do that year. And After round one, I was just mucking around and got hit by the golf cart. Although I didn't get hit that hard, to be perfectly honest with you. But there's a little box underneath the golf cart at the front, and that clipped my Achilles. And once that hit it, it just swelled again, and I had to spend the next probably 3 or 4 weeks trying to get the swelling back out of it. So it didn't take much, and that probably was, in hindsight, if I'd have got a nick during a game, well, the same thing might have happened. Anyway. So, yeah, just unlucky at that point, mate, and I just battled that Achilles then for the rest of the year.
Incredible that it was caught on film too. I'm not sure who was filming it. It was Fox, was it? Oh, good old Fox, yeah.
It was, mate. It was Fox. It was Esky. He was there. He was the one who filmed it and took it back. There was a little bit going on too, from what I understand, in terms of whether the club didn't really want it shown because, trying to hide the injuries and all those sort of things back then.
Unsuccessfully.
It's fun that it's out there, mate. So it's something we, as I said, we laugh about a fair bit.
You played, obviously, with some of the biggest names in Western Bulldogs or Footscray history. You have a good grasp as well on all the big names that came before you, Jono. So I wanted to ask you where you think Marcus Bontempelli rates and casting forward, which is dangerous, but where you think he could rate at the end of it all.
Yeah, Sam, I've said that he could be the very best by the end of it. He's certainly not there yet. He's in the conversation, no question. But, you know, with what Westy did and what Granny did in terms of what I saw throughout their careers and before that, you know, obviously the word around EJ Witten and Doug Hawkins and the like and what these guys were as players were unbelievable. I saw Hawk a lot, of course, and having played and lived through Granty and his ability to be the best leader of all time that I experienced and also with, you know, Westy's seven best and fairest is unbelievable. But when you talk of the Bont, he's already got, you know, a couple of All Australians under his belt. He's got a premiership under his belt. So by the end, he could have, you know, 5 to 6 best and fairest wins, a couple of premierships and probably a couple of those potentially as captain of the football club. This guy is unbelievable. I love his leadership. I love his calmness as well with the way that he goes about his footy and leading the group. So certainly by the end of his career, I've really got no doubt that he will be probably considered the best Bulldog of all time.
You mentioned the premiership there, just the 2016 grand final. How did you navigate that day? And what was more nerve-wracking? Was it that day against Sydney or was it the prelim that the club had obviously failed to get past so many times before?
It was both. To be honest, because it was an unbelievable month, Sam. It was a great celebration. And that's where Fox were brilliant with me that month. They basically said, let's ride this, go and enjoy it. You know what I mean? If they win the first final, let's get up. If they win the second, let's build this up even more. It was great to be a part of. They sent me to every game that they played in, and it was great to be around that prelim final. I sat with Mitch Hahn for the entire game. The first half were really cool and composed and all that. The second half were both a nervous wreck. And a mess. And at the end of that game, I walked past Peter Gordon and he went to sort of slap me on the back and he got me in the back of the head and nearly knocked me out. So he was up and about and the grand final was unbelievable. Like to experience it and have the whole family there and experience it with Donna and the kids was huge. And I judged the Norm Smith that day, Sam. So towards the end, I was a bit all over the shop because, you know, we're going to win our first flag in such a long time. I had to put some votes in as well. So it was all happening, but it was just absolutely amazing. What an amazing game. What an amazing month of football. And for me, it was more probably that second quarter against Hawthorn in the second final, Sam, that we were 20-odd points down and let it then. Bont turned it on and we led at halftime. And I knew from that point that we were a serious chance to probably take out the flag because of, you know, the way we were then competing against the very best team in the modern era in the Hawks.
Great final series, wasn't it? Looking back, it was almost destiny when you think about it all. Before we let you go, Jono, do you have a similar vibe about this year's group? What level of optimism do you have about what you're seeing about the 2021 version of your old club?
Yeah, Sam, they're awesome to watch. And they have been for quite some time. But when you look at the footy club, we won the flag from seventh. We've never been a top four team under Bevo, and I think that's been the thing for myself. How does this club take the step under his guidance to become a top four team in the competition? They've got the list to do it. He's an unbelievable coach that can certainly do it. But how are they going to jump a few to become, you know, that type of club again. And this year they're proving that they will be a top four team. They could be a top four team for some years to come. So as we know, Sam, when you put yourself in that position and you're consistently getting yourself in the top four, the double chance, prelim finals, then you will take that next step. And a lot of the guys have experienced that next step, which and the club has in recent time, which I think helped when they do eventually make some prelim finals again. And you know, if it doesn't happen this year, they hopefully will be a top four team this year and give themselves a real crack. But I think consistently over the next few years, they're going to be in a really good sweet spot to have another crack at it.
Brad Johnson, it's been an absolute pleasure to catch up today. Gee whiz, you're a superstar. And while the resume more than speaks for itself, the fact that you perform so very highly over such a long period of time so consistently makes you a very rare talent indeed. Well done on all you achieved, and thanks a lot for joining us.
Awesome, Sam. I really appreciate it. Thanks very much, mate.
And thank you for joining us. Also, you've been listening to This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. Jump online to find tobinbrothers.com.au, and we'll catch you the next time we celebrate the life of another sporting icon.